Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. At the age of 7, Lea Salonga made her professional theatrical debut in the Philippines by performing in the musical The King and I, produced by Repertory Philippines. She went on to originate the role of Kim in the Schoenberg-Gubliel musical Miss Saigon. For her portrayal of Kim, Salonga won the Olivier, Tony, Drama Desk, and Outer Critics Circle Award.
The gods of fortune, midnight and high noon, sharing the sky. We have been blessed, you and I.
She played both Eponine and Fantine in Les Miserables, and famously sang the role of Eponine in Sir Cameron Mackintosh's 10th anniversary production, Les Miserables in Concert, which was filmed in London's Royal Albert Hall and is shown with some regularity on public television stations. Lea Salonga was named a Disney Legend last year for her work as the singing voice of both Princess Jasmine in 1992's Aladdin and Fa Mulan in 1998's Mulan. She is performing in concert this Saturday, May 5th at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall in Troy, New York at 8 p.m., and she joins us now. Lea, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much.
I'm very excited to speak with you.
Oh, thank you.
I had the cast recording of Miss Saigon on cassette.
That must have been a very long time ago then.
I wanted to start by talking about something I'm very unfamiliar with, which is the theater and arts world in the Philippines. Could you tell us about that, please?
Well, I began in musical theater when I was 7 years old in the Philippines, but there were already audiences coming in to see theater, I think from the 1950s and the 1960s. I think that's when it started to really gain a little bit of momentum. So by the time that I was coming in and participating in musical theater productions in Manila, it was already a thing for there to be a big musical or two, you know, during the year. So, yeah, so I'm actually very proud to be a part of that history and to see that it has just become a wonderful presence in the entertainment scene in Manila, where there's so many musicals that have, you know, short runs during the year, a lot of them licensed productions from the United States and from, I think, from the UK, plus some local homegrown musical theater fare, which is funny and dramatic and affecting. And it's great to see such a really lovely scene going on right now.
You began performing, you say, when you were 7 years old. Was that prompted
Correct, yeah.
by an early passion of yours, or did your parents direct you toward it?
Actually, it was I think it was one of my cousins who directed me towards it. She was a very active member of Repertory Philippines when she was younger, in her late teens, early 20s, I would think. And I would sing it a lot at family parties when I was maybe 5 or 6 or so. And my cousin then spoke to my mom, you should bring her to these auditions for The King and I. They're auditioning for children, and I think Lea would be great for it. So my mom brought me to the audition, and I got the job pretty quickly. It didn't take very long to figure that, well, okay, here's a kid with a very loud voice. Let's hire her to do this. And I ended up as one of the king's children, and in particular, the one with the big speech at the end of, near the end of the show.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't just get cast in a musical. I was also given a monologue, and I guess it sent me, you know, on the ground running.
How have you worked on and kept your voice up throughout your career?
I've not always been able to keep it up because, I mean, I have been injured vocally. I've had laryngitis. I've sung on top of laryngitis. You know, from doing an 8-show-a-week grind, I found myself fatigued in my vocal cords with bumps on them.
Mm-hmm.
But this was much earlier in my life. But, I mean, when I am ill and I have to do a concert, then it becomes quite dangerous. I mean, what a normal person would, you know, would listen and say, oh, I've got laryngitis. All right, that just means I'm going to rest and not talk so much. For me, when I get a diagnosis of laryngitis, it's like, it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Because my livelihood depends upon my voice and my vocal cords and how healthy my vocal cords are on any particular day and what its condition, you know, is on any particular day will then inform me as to how I'm going to sing on that particular night. So it's a whole thing. It's a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't this crazy, you know, get this elixir that's almost impossible to get. in, you know, like it's in a mountain in the Himalayas somewhere.
Right.
No, it isn't anything like that. It's very simple, common sense things that I do to just, you know, keep my voice up. But I just get more paranoid than other people do when there's something going on with my upper respiratory system.
Sure, understandably. You are, I think it's fair to say, most internationally associated with your work in Schoenberg and Bluebeel musicals, Miss Saigon and Les Miserables.
Correct.
You originated the role of Kim in Miss Saigon and won just about every award there is for it. Belated congratulations.
So, yeah. Oh, thank you.
Sure. Does that association that you carry with you for originating that role, does it ever bother you because you'd like to branch out more, or is it something that you're proud of and always think of fondly?
Oh, I will always be proud of that. I will always have a fondness for those musicals, only because when, for example, Les Miserables came out, there were no through-sung musicals that were ever being produced. I think it was just mostly the book musicals where there's dialogue and then here comes a song mm-hmm. and a dance. Whereas Les Mis and Miss Saigon, if you really look at it, they're operas, but with contemporary voices singing them. And, of course, huge mammoth sets and these big, you know, big productions, great costumes and all that.
Right.
But the cool thing about Les Mis and Saigon, I mean, there is a very naturalistic style of acting that goes along with them. It's very earthy. They're very, you know, they're very earthbound shows. And there's as romantic as they do get at points, there doesn't seem to be a flight of fancy type thing going on. I mean, the shows, there is an element of, oh my gosh, that is so incredibly sad, especially mm-hmm. with Miss Saigon being a reworking of Puccini's Madame Butterfly, where there is no happy ending to be had.
No.
And in Saigon's case, I think they really up the unhappy ending factor where, you know, because of this one girl's action, she's, at the end of the day, if you really look at it, she's the only one who really gets what she wants. And she's the only one with a definitive purpose and sees it through.
You who I cradled in my arms, you asking as little as you can. Little snip of a little man. I know I'd give my life for you.
Everyone else is a screw-up as a result, you know?
Yep.
With Kim, I mean, I've thought about this over the years, and she's the character who has an objective and fulfills it, all for the sake of her young son. Everybody has an agenda mm-hmm. at the end of the show. Kim is the only one who says, this is what is going to happen, and it happens.
Right.
You know, everyone is all of a sudden just left with a storyline of their own hanging.
Mm-hmm.
As the curtain's coming down, no one in the audience knows what's going to happen to any of these people. So I love having been a part of that, having been one of the forces that created this show and getting to sing some of the most beautiful music that's ever been written for musical theater. And it's nice to be associated with something that still has such a taste in the mouths of everyone that's gone to see it originally on Broadway
mm-hmm.
and in the West End. So I don't think I could ever really tire of either show, of either Les Mis or Saigon, because it just made so many audiences happy to have seen them. And it certainly made me happy to have been a part of them. And in some ways, because of the repeated telecasts on PBS of either anniversary of Les Mis,
right.
be it the 10th or the 25th, I find myself incredibly closely associated with Les Miserables. And it's a wonderful thing to have been a part of, you know, to have been an actor of color and to be a part of that show. It says a whole lot.
On my own, pretending he's beside me, all alone, I walk with him till morning. Without him, I feel his arms around me. And when I lose my way, I close my eyes and he has found me.
Last year, you were named a Disney legend for your work as Jasmine in Aladdin and Mulan in Mulan. Do you have, out of those two, a preferred Disney princess that you voiced, or are they both all right?
Oh, they're both pretty darn cool. I think I have a stronger association with Mulan just because it's an Asian story, and, you know, with these really authentic Asian characters, and the fact that, you know, here's somebody who can see that she doesn't fit in, but she finds her own way to define who she is in the world. And it was a wonderful movie to be a part of, you know, on that level, because it's pretty much an Asian girl power movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells a lot of young women, Asian or not, that being this feminine stereotype may not be your ideal place to be. It certainly wasn't Mulan's. And the great thing about it is that she does find her way of bringing honor to her family and to herself in a way that is unconventional and in a way that was very unique.
Look at me. I will never pass for a perfect bride or a perfect daughter. Can it be? I'm not meant to play this part. Now I see that if I were truly to be myself, I would break my family's heart.
It's kind of like if you've ever seen Game of Thrones.
I watch it, like, regularly.
You watch it regularly?
I do.
It's like Arya
it.
In the Stark household.
Right.
Where she's tomboyish and she obviously can't embroider like her sister. She's not feminine like her sister. She's into sword fighting. She can shoot a bullseye from further away than her younger brother. And it's the one character that I've really fallen in love with.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is so different from what a lot of the young women are being groomed to be. But she knows who she is, and she follows her own path. And I think it's cool that her father really encouraged that in her, you know, and she's feisty little one. I love that character.
Yeah, me too. She's fantastic, and she's having to go through a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Your most recent album is The Journey So Far, and it's mm-hmm. not the first of your albums you've released. When you put together a record, how do you decide what songs you'll include?
It's the music, really, that determines what goes into something and what doesn't go into something. And much more than anything else, and much more than, I think, who the producer is going to be, because there are so many great, 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 great people, you know, at the helm of so many wonderful records and such. At the end of the day, it's really, you know, it's the songs, it's the arrangements, it's the quality of the arrangements and various personnel. And
is that also the case when you're organizing a concert?
Yeah. It's how one song will flow into the next and into the next. And, you know, I determine first which of my staples get in
mm-hmm.
to a show, and then I build something around that. As to, okay, On My Own will get sung first. I Give My Life will go here. Reflection will go here. And A Whole New World's always closer to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, it's always fun. I pick somebody up from the audience and we sing together. And there are people who have actually gone to the shows having practiced.
I bet.
And, oh yeah. And so by the time they get up on the stage, they're very, very confident.
I have to let you go soon, but I was mm-hmm. hoping before I do if you would tell me about your work with the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations.
Oh, yeah. In 2010, I was nominated as an ambassador for FAO, for the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN. And I usually, what happens is that I will meet with the Department of Agriculture, and that the last time I was involved in anything with FAO, you know, I met with the Secretary of Agriculture, and it was for a World Food Day-related event. And he was talking about a new grain that is a far more resilient grain to all kinds of weather conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll grow whether it rains, whether it's dry, you know, whether it's watered, whether it's overwatered, you know, in a flood, in a storm, and whatever. It's something that's really hardy. And it's something that's actually indigenous to the south of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was talking to me about it, and then there was a really great chef who's a friend of mine who prepared a lot of the food using this grain. She made a risotto. She made a dessert. She made all this. It's like Iron Chef with this grain.
Uh-huh.
And it was something that was wonderful. And the thing that was wonderful about it is that because of how hardy it is and because of how resilient it is, you know, the farmer's not going to go, oh, no, another crop lost to the storm. You know, that's going to be less likely to be heard. And I like hearing stories like that because there is just such a high degree of poverty and starvation in my country. It's great to hear the efforts of the agriculture department to create crops that will not just instantaneously die. You know, it's great hearing about their efforts to teach farmers about what to farm during the seasons when rice is not, you know, actively growing. What is hardy? What works well for this climate? So farmers are becoming, I think, much more independent and much more knowledgeable. So it's really been exciting. It's been really, really exciting. I mean, I've been sent to one of the provinces that really plants a lot of rice, you know, during the year, and seeing what the farmers have gone through and what they have learned and how grateful they are to the UN at arming them with knowledge and resource and technique. It's really just wonderful to be a part of it.
Leah, thank you very much for your time.
And sure.
It was an absolute pleasure and an honor to speak with you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Leah Salonga is performing at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall in Troy, New York this Saturday at 8 p.m. To learn more, visit troymusichall.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.